Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenn the Geek from foggy Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from rainy Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning for December 22nd, 2010, episode 38, sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, horse people, and good morning, Glenn.
A little Mannheim Steamroller Christmas action to get the day started. Thought I'd get everybody's blood pumping with that. You got your coffee in your hand, I hope. And because I'll tell you what, we have a busy show today. Jennifer's just killing us here.
I know, she really is. But you know what Mannheim Steamroller reminds me of, Glenn?
What's that?
It reminds me of, like, completely grocery shopping during the Christmas season, because it seems like that is the grocery store music for the holiday season. It's always Mannheim Steamroller.
That is so true. I think because TSL would break the speakers, they stick with Mannheim Steamroller. Yeah. No, that is true. Yeah, you hear that all everywhere, actually. They must make huge residuals. I'm sure they can just live off the residuals now.
Oh, my gosh. Think of the people that make, like, the popular Christmas movie. Like, now the new generation's Christmas movie is Elf. But, you know, in my generation, it was A Christmas Story. And then the generation before that, it was A Wonderful Life. So if you commit with that one giant Christmas thing, you're good forever.
Yeah, you know what I haven't heard so much of this year is Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I haven't heard that so much this year. That's been kind of on the back burner.
That's okay. I'm okay with that one. <Being gone.
laughs> Let's go to Jennifer right away and find out what's coming up on today's show, because I know she has a busy day planned too. So let's free her up.
On today's show, Scott Trees, the horse world's leader in frequent flyer miles, will be here to talk about some of his positively amazing photographic adventures around the world. Next up is Samantha Penley, creator of thehorsepedia.com, a sort of electronic gathering place for the positive things about horsedom. You're going to want to tune into that. And to round out our Wednesday, Christy will be here as usual with a horse health report and today's topic, unwanted horses and making a positive impact.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. Boy, she does have a jam-packed show planned for us today. You got to say, Jennifer does her job, doesn't she?
She's doing a fantastic job, but really what she didn't say and what we really need to move on to, Glenn, is that, you know, we didn't talk to Phyllis yesterday.
And no, we didn't.
I'm a little bit bummed that we didn't talk to Phyllis. We did get an email from Phyllis telling us that she got the voicemail and that we're off the hook, but I don't think so. What do you think?
No, I don't think so either. No, I kind of don't think so. Let's remind everybody, we got this voicemail wishing everybody a Merry Christmas yesterday from Phyllis in Texas. And so we thought we'd try and call Phyllis because she says in the voicemail that she would never talk to us. So, and in the email, she said the same thing, that she loved our voicemail. She shared it with her husband. Should we play the player voicemail? Well, remind everybody that didn't hear yesterday's show why we're going to nag Phyllis again.
This is Phyllis from Texas. I'm calling for Horses in the Morning, and I had a message from my elderly pony Pebbles and my little corgi boy Jack. They wanted to wish a Merry Christmas to everybody at Horses in the Morning. And there you have it. Merry Christmas, Horses in the Morning, folks. Glenn and Jamie and Jennifer. Thanks for your messages. I'm babbling. I'll talk to you later. No, I probably won't. Bye-bye.
That just cracks me up every time.
I'll talk to you later. No, I probably won't. So we're going to make sure that Phyllis talks to us again, because she said she won't. And then she emailed yesterday and said, I'll never talk to you again. And we just cannot live with that. I can't go into Christmas knowing I have not talked to Phyllis.
And then the funny part was, later in the day, we get an email. I'm not going to call her out here, but we get an email from one of Phyllis's relatives who says that she will be home this morning and that we definitely should call. So let's give this a try. And if we get her machine, we're leaving another message. You can leave her another message, Jamie.
Every day, my friend, until she answers.
All right, we're trying to dial her here. I don't know. She's going to believe it, go to the machine again. I swear she's listening. Although she said she had a big cookie party today. She had all the ladies over. They get to pet noses and make cookies.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Jennifer. This is Phyllis from Texas. Who probably won't ever get a chance to talk to you. Because I'm not here right now. But keep trying. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Phyllis.
Phyllis, you're ridiculous. This is crazy. Why aren't you answering the phone? We will keep calling, even though you leave a voicemail directly for us. That was awesome. At least you're well aware that we are going to continue to stalk you until you answer the phone. This does not make you off the hook.
Phyllis, what up, you guys?
Oh, my God. Phyllis beat us on that one. I can't believe that.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm falling off my ball here.
Phyllis, you're my new best friend, darling. All right, we'll call you tomorrow. I'm going to call you personally on Christmas morning. That's what I'm going to do. good times.
I cannot believe she did that.
Unbelievable. Well, let's hang up on Phyllis. Maybe we'll call her at the end of the show.
I cannot believe she actually changed her voicemail message. That's very funny.
That's fantastic. Wow. Oh, Phyllis.
She definitely caught me off guard.
I thought she answered at first. I was like, this is a voicemail.
I'm sorry. Phyllis got me on that one. She wins. She wins today. I have to give it to her. She gets today's point.
So far, it's 1-1. We have one. Phyllis has one. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Sounds like the gauntlet has been thrown down. Well, speaking of gauntlets, oh, my God, there's a war going on our Facebook page. Everybody can head over to Horses in the Morning on Facebook, our fan page. There's a war going on over there. We started something with all this hottest horse person thing, horseman thing. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Ivory Cal has a few friends, huh?
Well, you know, what's been shocking is that really, in all senses of the word, this contest is not typically a voting contest, although I am saying that the judges are being swayed right now by the copious amount of Facebook posts that are coming in. And what's funny is people are voting for Monty. Monty Roberts is nominated for Hottest Horse Dad, and then for Ivory Powell and Raphael. And They're not even competing against each other. They're in two totally different categories.
I think, though, that their fan, they have gotten their fan bases motivated now, and we better look out. Ivory Powell has almost 30,000 fans.
That's amazing.
It is. And then Monty, you know, he has his tens of thousands of fans, so they have a support group behind them, that's for certain. And I know we probably have some new listeners here this morning on the show. We want to welcome everybody that's new to the show. And we will have the award ceremony for the Hottest Horseman Contest for 2010 a week from tomorrow on the 30th. Helena B., my co-host on the Stable Scoop Radio Show, and Jamie Jennings, my co-host right now, sitting over there laughing with me. They'll both be here. I'm being kicked the hell out, so I won't be here.
Yeah. You're gone. Gone, my friend. It's ladies only. And we will welcome your calls nominating, continuing to nominate. You know, we have several categories. We have, you know, the hottest Horseman Awards encompasses several different things, including Best Couple, which is, of course, Horse and Man, which is the nominations for Raphael. And then we've got, you know, Hottest Horse Dad, which Monty is nominated for, Hottest Horse Husband, Hottest Vet, Hottest Farrier, and then Best in Breeches and Most Eligible Bachelor. So we've gotten several nominations, but I'm really shocked that we haven't gotten more farriers and vets. I would totally nominate my farrier, but my farrier's a woman. Although I did tell her I might just slide her in the category anyway. She's a hot chick. So
Dr. Jeff Tucker is nominated under the Most Hottest Veterinarian. He's a veterinarian and a horse dentist, travels all over the country and been on the show here. And he has a lot of fans out there. I wrote to him yesterday to make sure he knew that he was nominated in that category. And I got a short email back that said, "You've got to be kidding me."
Yeah, one of his clients nominated him and sent a picture of him. So people are getting very excited. I am mired in emails. I've printed them out, and they're coming up to about – a stack is up to my knees by now. So keep them coming, and keep your voting going online.
Nominations, Jamie, is way up. I was just looking at your latest update from yesterday, and they can find that under the notes section of our Horses in the Morning page under notes. And the number of nominations you have is huge now.
I know. It's just, and it's getting bigger every single day. So get your nominations in because we, you know, as professional journalists, need to research thoroughly all the nominations and pore over the photos. And I mean, it's a hard job. It's difficult. You know, it's very difficult, Glenn, I'm not going to lie, to look through all these photos and, you know, really read the 200 words or less that people are writing about the people that they want to nominate. So, you know, just keep them coming because it's a job that I am happy to do.
I know, and you haven't complained about it at all. I've been very impressed. There's been no whining on your part.
Well, I'm taking one for the team here. It's a lot of extra homework, but I'm happy to do it.
All of you Raphael and Ivory Powell fans want to listen in. We play a song every day on the show if you're new to the show. About halfway through the show, we play a song every day, and it's songs about horses. And I have one picked out especially for all the Raphael and Ivory Powell fans. It could be Raphael's theme song, actually. So listen for that about halfway through the show. That's coming up. And, of course, we have our horse health segment today, as Jennifer said, and we just have so many cool things. But I wanted to mention there was a story yesterday that they have – remember we talked about War Horse last week? That's the play and the movie coming out based on the play that's been in England now for quite a while. Your favorite place. And they have picked the cast now. They're not bringing the English cast over. They picked an all-American cast to be part of it, and – looks like some Broadway veterans are going to be playing the roles. So that's coming up. I did check on ticket prices. They're from $100 to $200.
Really?
Depending on where you sit. Yep. And, well, you know, Broadway tickets aren't cheap. And then it officially starts. There's some preview showings starting in the middle of March, but it officially starts in the middle of April. So maybe, you know, even summertime we can get out to New York and check out the play. That would be fun. And we have had enough of interest with our listeners that I think we could make it an event, you know. Trying to all get there the same night.
Buy out the whole theater. I think that's cool. Yeah, the other thing, just because you mentioned it, Glenn, I wanted to give you an update. I am kind of on pins and needles this morning because, you know, my husband has been stuck in London for what will be 6 days if he gets home tomorrow like he's supposed to, and I have not heard from him this morning, and he was supposed to board a plane this morning to get out of London. Only one-third of the capacity of flights are leaving London right now. So I haven't heard from him, and I'm hoping that that means that he's on that plane and he's on his way to Madrid, which then he will go from Madrid to New York. Initially, I think they were going from New York to Chicago, Chicago to Dallas, and Dallas to Phoenix. So the man is working hard trying to get home, poor thing. So hopefully, you know, gosh, the way that it's working out, Glenn, this is amazing. I live about an hour from the airport. I live way west Phoenix. And so going to the airport is a trek. And my family's coming in tomorrow as well. My two brothers, my dad, and my dad's girlfriend, they're all flying in to stay for Christmas. My family is slated to get in at 1:15 in the afternoon. And Chad is supposed to get here at 1:30 in the afternoon.
Let's hope that works out. That'd be convenient.
Yeah, so one of my students' mom is like, how are you going to get everybody home? And I said, I have no idea. I don't have a car that big.
Time to rent a van.
She's lending me her minivan. She's like, I knew I'd get you in a minivan someday.
Well, I don't have any surprise emails from Chad for you today, or voicemails, I mean. I don't have any surprises for you today. I learned my lesson yesterday.
Yes, so, I was a little bit of a puddle after you played the voicemail that he left. So I appreciate you laying off a little bit today.
We have our first
Unless
guest
you
here.
Oh, you do? Good.
Let's talk to one of my favorite horse photographers in the world. Scott Trees is one of the finest horse photographers in the world. He's known worldwide for his images of the horse, and he has a unique perspective and a whole lot of talent. He travels all around the world. He's been to some of the most interesting places over the last 36 years. Scott's getting old now, just like me. I thought I heard him laughing at that one. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. As I sit here trying to get my arthritis to go away, no, I'm not getting old, man. What do you mean?
We appreciate you taking time out to join us this morning. You know, you and I have had many chats over on Horse Tip Daily, and we just have a great time chatting over there.
Absolutely.
But I really wanted to get you on the live show because, you know, I wanted to talk more or less about photography, actually, and more about some of your travels. And, you've been doing this for 36 years, and you don't just take pictures of horses. You take pictures of architecture and fashion and photojournalism, and you've done all different kinds
of
things.
Yeah.
I think horses are your passion, but...
Yeah, and that's certainly the engine that pulls the train. You know, it's because of horses that I've, you know, been able to do a lot of the other things I've done.
Well, I have four things I want to talk to you about today.
Okay,
first of all,
right,
do you
all right.
mind giving a brief history of how and telling us a little bit about how this Palace project came about?
Well, I was actually shooting for the ruler of Sharjah. I was shooting one of his horses.
Now, what's Sharjah? Let's start there.
I'm sorry, Sharjah is one of the very exotic. Sharjah is one of the Emirates of the United Arab Emirates. It's near Dubai. Everybody would probably be familiar with Dubai.
Okay.
And Dubai is the Emirates consists of seven different Emirates, and each is kind of its own kingdom in a sense. Each has its own ruler. And so I was shooting for the ruler of Sharjah, and great stallion that he had there, and in front of this incredible palace, huge, enormous. And so we took pictures of the horse, and then he came out and invited me after the shoot to come into the palace. And so I walked in and, of course, carried a camera and just sort of being me, said, took a couple of pictures, and it was an incredible place. And so I got to talking with him, and I showed him the pictures the next time we came. I said, well, I wanted to give these to you as a thank you. And he said, well, you know, I've been thinking about doing a book of my palace as a gift to visitors and guests. Would you be interested in shooting a book? And of course, I said, no, I'm not interested. But I, over a two-year period of time, as I went back and forth to the country, I had complete access to the palace and shot a book for him that's in London now being printed. And it was quite an experience. I mean, it's an incredible, incredible palace. He's quite an interesting fellow, and the design of it was beautiful, and it had gorgeous oriental rugs and beautiful marble and hand-carved walls in some of the rooms. I mean, all the rooms were, I got to see the whole palace. Of course, I could only photograph the parts that the public could see, or visitors, and not the private residents. So it was
How
an interesting
is-
project. Oh, it's enormous. I don't know. I think it's 60 or 70,000 square feet, something like that.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it's quite the, and he's quite the avid gardener, and so he has incredible gardens outside the palace, which I was also able to photograph. So here
now, does he actually
in
work in the
desert.
Garden himself, Scott?
No. He has a staff for that, but knows what he wants. I mean, he basically designs what he wants, and has a full-time fellow that, you know, basically implements his design for him. And so it was quite a fun project, and very different, and kind of, you know, spending time, you know, trying to figure, I mean, he has a thing for Tiffany chandeliers, and so the home is full of these incredible chandeliers that have been custom made, and it was a great project.
Well, now, are you off to the Sultan of Dubai's palace next?
No. The interesting part about this is that we're used to, over in this part of the country, you know, we see books on the Hearst Castle and the Biltmore House, and all these grand residences over here have had numerous books on about them. Over there, they don't do books on their palaces. It was really quite an honor, I later found out, actually, because they just don't do this. And I won't be doing another one, I don't think, at least anytime soon. I'm trying to work on some projects in Doha, which is in Qatar, and get some projects over there architecturally. But it was quite an honor to be able to do this book and to have the access I had to it, to Palace, to shoot what I needed to shoot.
Hey, Scott, this may be a dumb question, but is it safe over there?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's. I always have to assure my family that I'm not going where I have to wear a flak jacket. It's actually, you know, when we talk about
nice.
The middle, you know, I'm not wearing armored underwear. It's okay, everything's fine. But it's the Middle East, but it's the Gulf region. So it's you're in the area of Qatar and or you hear a lot of the press call it Qatar, and there's no way in our English word that we have the right way to say it. I call it Qatar. But then you have the United Arab Emirates, which is where Dubai is located, and then you've got Oman and Jordan, that whole area. And they're really very pro-West and very friendly. And Dubai is probably one of the safest cities in the world. And I've never, ever feared for my safety. My wife's been over there with me. She's never been afraid. There's no place in that country that I've been concerned going alone at night. And I've been lost over there many times at night. And, you know, it's a very, very safe country. There's 180 nationalities and 22 major religions living side by side there.
All right. Well, that's good. I know we have an Air Force base over there because I've had some friends deployed over to the UAE. So I know that that's safe. But when you think about all those tiny little countries with their rulers that make up the UAE, you would think,
right.
You know, just with history, that there would be one ruler trying to take over the other ones. I watch too many movies, I'm sure, but
that really was the case in the early, before their the main ruler of Abu Dhabi, and I'm drawing a blank on his name. I can't think of it in a second, but the main guy that united the Arab Emirates, so that's why it's called the United Arab Emirates. And they learned that they could achieve more by working together. And there is one guy that is in charge of the country in Abu Dhabi. I mean, he's kind of like would be equivalent of our president. But each emirate has its own ruler and its own ruling family. And so and they're basically the families that were in charge and were in power when oil was discovered, and you know, when they kind of decided to, you know, join forces together. So it's a very unique history there, really. And Dubai is an amazing city. It's kind of a Vegas on steroids without gambling. But even Dubai, Dubai has been, you know, impacted by this economy. So, you know, nobody's impervious to it.
Well, now you've traveled all over the world. I was fortunate enough to go see your gallery exhibit here at the Kentucky Horse Park when it was in, and I've seen many of your photos, and people can see a lot of your work at treesmedia.com. So I have a couple of questions for you. What was the most surprising photo shoot you've ever done? The one where you went and thought, this is just going to be a normal photo shoot, and you came away from it going, wow.
Actually, that would have to be a non-horse shoot, to tell you the truth. I was contacted by a fishing resort in northern Vancouver to do a video and still shoot for them. And I chuckled because I wrote in my calendar for the week I was going to be there, fish video. As I'm going there, and each plane gets successively smaller en route to this an inlet in northern Vancouver, and I'm flying in a seaplane over some of the most pristine wilderness I've ever seen. This was a called King Pacific Lodge, and they actually built the lodge on a barge, and they haul it up into this inlet every spring and haul it out in the fall. And it turned out, over a couple of year period of time for this client, shooting incredible scenery and whales and killer whales and sperm whales and sea lions and Komodo bears. And it just was one of those unbelievable kind of jobs. You're there going, I'm getting paid to be here. And I went up there several times, but it was, I still kind of have that. I looked at that calendar where I wrote fish video for the week, and it was, it turned out to be a phenomenal experience.
So the fish video was the one that turned out to be your surprise. How about How about the most exotic shoot? It was just, you were standing there going, this is just surreal.
I've had a lot of those, actually. I've had a great good fortune to really shoot in a lot of exotic locations. But I think it would have to be some of the desert shoots. So one of the desert shoots in particular that I shot that great shot of, that white stallion escape of a Navarone in the desert. And it was just, the lighting was incredible, and the horse was just full. He's a horse that's very full of himself and an incredibly charismatic horse. And is one of those stallions that when you bring another stallion up to tease him, which we do that a lot when we take pictures, he's going to react. He's reasonably predictable that way. And it was just, this horse was just incredibly charismatic in that venue. And probably another one would have to be Poland, when I shot in Poland and shot at the studs there. That Poland just took my heart. And not that it was exotic per se. This was in the 90s when Poland had just come out of communism. And the exoticness of it was the third world nature of it at that time. They were just, you're driving down highways with people whose car was their horse and wagon pulling them down the street. And, horses were still very much a part of, they cut their hay by a horse-drawn mower, and they loaded the wagon by hand. And, the horse was still a very critical part of their ability to survive. And it was an area that probably one of my favorite horse pictures I've ever taken was there, of my personal favorites, of a big Belgian draft horse. I was staying with a real character, a guy named Maciej Krzakowicz, and he had taken an old brick foundry and had turned it into a B&B kind of a place. And it was very uniquely kind of whatever he could find to decorate. And he in his own right was a very well-known equestrian painter in that part of the world. And I was there with a friend from Wales, and we were staying there, and they had a McCullen war style and a Prussian war helmet and an old trumpet kind of a thing, and we his room that we had us in was his gallery, and we had been down in southern Poland at one of the other farms in Michałów, and the diet was very simple then. I mean, you had in the morning you had a tomato and an egg and toast, and in the afternoon you might have meat, you might not, and then you had in the evening you had a tomato and some cheese and some bread, and that was kind of it. And we'd been eating on that for a week, so we were both kind of hungry. And Maciek spoke no English, and so we get into this place, and I mean, his paintings were in his gallery area, where he had the table for us to eat, and his wife was very charming, and nobody spoke English, and that's never been a problem for me in my travels. I try and learn how to say hello, please, and thank you, and that with a lot of smiling and body language and gestures seems to get you a lot of places. And so we're sitting there, and he offers us a beer, and so we're having a Polish beer, and he brings out this dish with I think it was a fish of some sort. And Mark was very Welsh, and he said, Scott, what do you think this is? And I said, Mark, I really don't care. I'm so hungry for something meat, I'm going to eat it. And it turned out it was wonderful. But then he comes and he walks and he goes, music? And I go, sure. And he puts on Dire Straits, Telegraph Road. And I felt like I was in a Fellini movie. And it turned out that we had a pretty good time there. There's have in my files, there's a picture of me drunk as a skunk sitting on the McClellan war saddle or the McClellan saddle with the Prussian helmet on trying to play the trumpet. And we had a pretty good time every night there. But he came and got me, and he had a little car that was about the size of it was a very small car. And he used it to haul his hay, and so the back seat, which where Mark sat in the back seat, it was all full of hay and stuff. But he yelled at me, Scott, Kona, come, we go. And so we ran out, and we followed this big hay wagon that this big Belgian horse was pulling back to the barn. And he knew the guy, and so he's gone, and because all the homes in that part of the world are built around a courtyard, so you kind of go through a gate into a courtyard area, which is where the barn is, the stable, and you know that's kind of where everybody lives. And well, I literally had to go, you know, past the junkyard dog that was on the end of the chain, leaping the chain, biting at me, and I'm going nice doggy, and you know trying to figure out how you say that in Poland, and got into this courtyard, and he was. He was unhooking the horse, who was still in full harness. And Maciek had conveyed to him that I wanted to photograph him. And so he thought I wanted to photograph he and his horse. So that's fine. He stood next to his horse, and I took pictures of him and his horse. I'm shooting all this in black and white. And then he went, moment, and he runs in and he gets his family, and he brings his family out.
Aww.
And he stands his family next to this horse, and you know, I take pictures of he and his family, and they were so proud. And then what I wanted was the horse. So I walked over and took the horse from them and headed him toward and let him walk toward the barn. And I wanted to get – it was a very old, rustic wood barn that he was – and the wagon was in the barn full of hay. And kind of it was dark around the wagon. You could just see the hay. And so the horse is walking back into the barn, and just as he – starts to go off to his little stable that's on the right, and he's still in full harness. He reaches over and grabbed a bite of hay,
and you got
it. Was just, and I got that, and it was. That picture "End of the Day," and it was a wonderful moment for me, and probably of all the hundreds of thousands of pictures of horses I've taken, that is my personal favorite, because it was such a wonderful moment of that horse was so tired, and you could see it in his eyes, and it's like he decided that he was going to take a bite of, you know, the reward himself for his efforts of the day.
I want to see that one. Where can I see it?
Well, I think I have it on my website. If I don't, I'll put it on there today so you can. Since I told the story, people are going to go, I want to see the picture. So I'll put it on today so people can see it.
That would be great. I'd love to see that picture. You know, you have when we went to the exhibition over at your exhibit over at the Kentucky Horse Park, and I think you know which one I'm talking about because I think we've discussed this before. There's one of your photos that is my absolute favorite, and I don't know why. I think it's just because you caught the essence of a moment, and it doesn't have horses in it. It has the oxen, and it's the two girls that are walking.
Yeah, the girl with the water buffalo.
The water buffalo
in Cairo.
Oh,
yeah.
What an amazing shot.
You know, that is
on your website.
Yes, it is on my website. That shot was actually taken from a moving car, and Cairo was another place that was fascinating to me because I'm kind of a history buff and just the antiquity of there. One of the things that I have learned in my travels and one of the things that I feel we've lost sight of in this country is what is a right and what is a privilege. And so much of what we assume is a right in the United States is actually a privilege in many parts of the world, and it's actually a privilege here as well. And I was actually giving a presentation at the Arabian Horse Youth Nationals one year. I was the keynote speaker for their annual meeting, and I was trying to think, you know, what could I say to a room full of young people and not sound like I was talking down to them or keep their interest. And I basically used that as my theme and built up to that shot of this lady, this young girl who's leading this water buffalo, and they're herding some sheep with it. And she happened to look back at me and right when I shot it. And there was it's one of those shots that the connection was there. I mean, I hit it and she's looking straight at me as the car is going by her. But I got to the point when I put this shot up on screen for these young ladies and said, now tell me that this young lady thinks that she's entitled to a cell phone, designer jeans, and designer shoes. She's wearing a very simple cotton shift and her head's tied back in a scarf and she's wearing sandals. And so, you know, that is her world. I mean, that's it. That's all she has. She's very poor. And so that shot, you know, was definitely one of my favorites of a non-horse kind of a thing, and I know you like that shot, Glenn. It is on my website.
I'm waiting for the large blow up you had at the exhibit to arrive at my house one day. Actually,
yeah, that 40x60, and you know,
yeah,
that's the one I'm waiting for. That's what's fun about. Well, let's see. I'll have to see if we can get that shipped to you.
Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate it. I've been waiting all this time. I gave you the hint five times last year.
Well, you know, how thoughtless of me. I'll have to make a note to myself.
What's the privilege, Glenn?
What's fun about that, Glenn, is, you know, when you say that print is big. And as a photographer, you know, when we most of the time you see your stuff in magazines or books or whatever, and to be able to get to see your work that big at one time is a thrill for me as an artist and as a photographer to get to see that much of my work that big. I just had that happen again in a different kind of vein. Here in Fort Worth, I had a company, Trinity Terrace in Fort Worth, purchased 38 prints from me of large canvas wrap giclée prints to use in decor in their facility. And so once again, it was an opportunity. I mean, the prints varied in size from 16x20s to 20x30s. And it was fun to get to see. And that I kind of took from the seminar that I have in Colorado every year through the Equine Photographers Network, that we have these access to great horses, herds of horses, large herds of horses. And I've never had opportunities like that except in Poland and Russia to get that many horses in a herd at one time. So I kind of took shots from a very Western theme because we have real cowboys and cowgirls working these horses and bringing them back from their pastures and, you know, and bucking them out and doing all this stuff. And so I got to see my print work. The point of that whole story was I got to see my work again big, and it's always a treat as a photographer to get to see that.
That's cool.
Well, that was my first exposure to Scott was at this exhibition over here. And I'll tell you what, Jamie, he's absolutely right. When you see these, you know, 4 feet by 6 feet, you know, it is just incredible with the lighting and everything. Scott, we are plain running out of time. I could talk to you all day. And, you know,
well,
will you come back with us maybe once a month and we can chat here on the show? We just love chatting with you.
I would be delighted to come back. It's always a treat to be on your show.
Yay.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. Merry Christmas, and I know you're heading off again here soon after the holidays.
Yes.
So you have a
yes.
safe trip.
And I guess the next time we talk, I will talk to you from Dubai.
Oh, wow.
All right, that sounds good. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that we can Skype it or somehow, I'm sure. But did want to say, when you go to my seminar, my website, I'm offering a seminar on photographing horses, a webinar, actually. So there's some information about that on my website. So anybody that wants to learn how to improve their efforts of photographing horses, go to my site, and the webinar starts in January. It'll be a four-part weekly webinar.
And that's treesmedia.com, and we'll post that link to that on our website as well.
Perfect.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Scott. Merry Christmas to you and the family.
Merry Christmas to you all. Okay, take care.
Thanks, bye-bye. Scott.
Bye-bye.
Wow,
he's fascinating.
Oh, awesome. And I've been going through his website while we're sitting here talking to him, and the photography is amazing, and just the subjects in the photographs are incredible. I mean, here he is, I mean, literally in the desert, and even the photographs of the models, there's this woman that is clearly in, you know, some Eastern gear. I don't know what, you know, it's not a burqa or whatever. I don't know what the clothes are called, but she's in the desert, and it's just a phenomenal photograph with, like, the different colors, and it's just amazing photographs. And the horses, of course, are perfect. And what I like is it's not just, like, headshot after headshot. It's the horse swung his head in from inside the barn, and it's just a photograph of his neck coming out of the double doors. You know, it's just really amazing stuff. I'm a little speechless. Sorry.
That's okay. No, it is amazing stuff. I've done tips. I've been talking to Scott on and off now for 2 years, and you know, every time we talk, it takes us hours to get to get an hour's worth of tips done. Takes us like 3 hours because. Can you imagine what his passport looks like? You know,
no.
He just has the most amazing stories. And doesn't it make you want to travel with him sometime? You know, just to see what he sees? How incredible is that? It's just totally incredible. Well,
just to wrap it up, what I love is that we did talk to the other photographer as well. And, you know, we think we have an amazing job. And it has to do with horses. And there's so many different amazing avenues that you can do just by having a horse job, a horse career. And these people are traveling all over the world, blessed, you know, in part from the oil in Dubai to go photograph. But, you know, just phenomenal different people in different places in the world that you can be touched by the horse. I just think it's cool.
I do too, and you know, thank you, Scott, for taking time out. You know, he's kind of a busy guy, and he takes time out for us here, and we're definitely, Jennifer, make sure we get him back once a month, because I think between Jamie and I, we could do a whole show with him once a month. He's just so fascinating.
he's really
into Arabs. He's a real big Arab guy, and he has tons of stories from that side of the world too, and I think it's just incredible. Well, it's time for us to take our musical interlude for the day. And this one is going out to all the Ivory Pal and Raphael fans. Raphael is really big into, you know, first of all, Ivory Pal, for those that didn't listen to the show that Raphael was on, is a Palomino, Tennessee walking horse. He's a gated horse, but his gaits came naturally. He has had nothing, you know, unnatural done to get his gaits. He's a champion, you know, many times over. He's won many, many shows. With this horse, he's barefoot, he rides them bitless, so, you know, he's really into natural horsemanship with this horse, and I think that this song by Marianne Kennedy called Tennessee, take a close listen to the lyrics, I think that you'll see that this song was written for Raphael and Ivory Pal, so this is a shout-out to them, and all the probably 100 people that posted in the last day on our website that they should win the hottest Horseman Couple Award. So that's the Tennessee.
naturally with a Tennessee walking horse. And, you know, they've been just posting and posting and posting on our Facebook, voting for them for best couple in the hottest horseman couple category. So we wish them the best of luck. And I do want to tell you, Glenn, also on the natural side of things, Zenyatta, I don't know, have you been reading Zenyatta.com, her blog?
I don't have to. You fill me in every day.
Well, she wrote a blog about them taking her shoes off. She's now barefoot and living out in the field, but she's only been able to be hand-walked. And yesterday, they let her out and took the lead rope off for the first time ever. And it's so cool. On the Blood Horse, they have a video of it, and Zenyatta blogged about it. And you can just see her. Well, I say it like this. I feel so stupid every time. It's like you can just feel her excitement as she writes this blog about being turned out for the first time. And it was really cool. They flew in. The Mosses flew in. The groom flew in. Mario, the whole kind of Zenyatta family was there when they turned her out. And they let her go for a little while, and she just kind of walked around. She walked up to each person. They gave her some treats, and it was like all of a sudden she puts her head up and she goes, wait a second. They can just let me go. And, man, she just took off galloping around in the snow in this huge pasture in Kentucky. You know, it was just, it's a really, really cool video. So if you go to the Blood Horse, you can see that there. And, you know, what I like about this is I don't remember a horse ever, you know, even after retirement, affecting this many people. She's got like 50,000 fans on Facebook. That's how huge she is. And what I like is that the Zenyatta family keeps feeding us stuff, you know, to keep up with her and keep track of her. And it's like they really kind of understand that this is a very public-oriented horse. The family loves her, and they just keep giving us videos and phones, blogs and pictures and everything. And I just think it's really, really cool. So Zenyatta.com, you can read her blog on I don't get paid to promote Zenyatta, I swear.
Well, I'll tell you what, you don't need to, because Zenyatta has quite a marketing machine behind her anyway. And I did watch the video, and it was a lot of fun to watch. And it was amazing. The first thing that struck me in the beginning of the video is her entourage. She
yes.
has this entire entourage of people walking her out to the field. This is they're turning her out for the first time. It wasn't like it was a big race or anything. And there's all the photographers are there, and, you know, all the families there, and the groom from out there in California flew in. It was her entourage. They were all just walking along. But you're right, it was kind of fun to see her. I didn't realize, and I don't remember this from the races, and I watched every one of them, her tail sticking up like that.
No, I think that's more of the, like, Arab influence, you know, coming out in the freedom. But no, she stuck her tail right up straight in the air like an Arabian, and just,
yeah,
it was almost like she wasn't galloping. She was like Pepe Le Pew, like boing, 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 boing.
Yep, exactly. That's true.
That was great. But I really want to thank, you know, all the people in her entourage for continuing to feed us all the information on her. Can you remember a horse ever that has had this kind of following after they've retired?
No, and she's still not going to win Horse of the Year. You know that, don't you?
They're just
not going to give it to her. I'm pretty convinced that it's not going to happen.
When did they announce that?
I don't know. You know, let's see if we have Christy coming up here from our weekly horse health report from thehorse.com. She's on there. Let's just ask her about this. Christy, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, do you know when to announce the Horse of the Year for, you know, we're here sitting here for Zenyatta, so.
I am afraid I do not. I'm sorry. That's the thoroughbred side of the house is the one that I don't spend as much time on. So I'm sorry.
Okay.
I swear, if she does not win Horse of the Year, I am going to write a strongly worded letter to the NPRA and all the governing bodies, and I will let them know how I feel. Okay.
That sounds good. You should start a petition.
Yeah.
What about you, Christy? You know, just like Jamie was just saying, I have not seen another horse that has generated the emotion in a generation that this horse has.
I think that there have been a couple of other horses that generated a lot of emotion for other reasons. You know, Barbaro is the first one that comes to mind through everything that he went through. But just for a racing career, you know, and Zenyatta was a great racehorse, and she raced a lot more than a lot of horses do. Seems like this, you know, really top racehorses anymore. So I think that helps a lot, is just having her out there in front of the public and winning, not just winning so many races, but running so many races. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think what you said was the most important part of that is that her owners and the people around her understood the importance of having her out in the public and making her so public. I think that's what's missing in a lot of racing today.
Agree.
Absolutely. I really think that they've done a fantastic job. You know, I was a fan of Big Brown, and then he went and retired, and you know, unless you – you know, look for him online. There's not some huge following. There's not any news stories about him, you know, and Barbaro, definitely the coverage continued, but I just can't remember. And maybe it's the world that we live in now, because social media is so easy to find that, you know, but there's still people behind her dedicating their time to keeping everybody posted, and they're not making, you know, any money off that. I mean, how could they? So I just think it's awesome. I can't think of another horse that they've done this with.
Can you tell me you're passionate about this, Christy?
Say again, I didn't catch your question. I'm sorry.
I said, can you tell she's passionate about Zenyatta?
I can, I think that's wonderful, because it's just as you said, you know, she has aroused a lot of passion in, you know, across the industry and even in the fans that may not know as much about horses, because they've kept her so far in the forefront of things. And I think it's a fantastic thing. It's been a great thing for the sport.
Well, you didn't call today to talk about Zenyatta. So this is our weekly horse health report with thehorse.com. Christy is here as always every week, and we appreciate that. And we do have your guest on the line. So take it away, Christy.
Thanks so much. And, you know, but I do like talking about Zenyatta. I think she's just awesome and her style is huge. But anyway, we'll go on. we wanted to talk a little bit today about rescuing horses because it's right around Christmas time. And there are probably a number of people out there either thinking about giving an unwanted horse a home for Christmas or helping improve its current home. And so we've got Erin with us, as always. And we also have a new guest today, Milt Tovey, who's an attorney in the Central Kentucky area, who's also focuses a lot on equine issues because he's got a horse background. And, you know, we're not here really to talk about the unwanted horses issue. We're here to talk about, you know, whether you call them unwanted horses or homeless horses or whatever you want to call them. But we're talking about how to help those horses because there obviously are a lot of them out there. And Milt's here to talk to us a little bit about the legal aspects of getting involved. And even though he is here as an attorney, legal action is generally the last resort. So, Milt, can you tell us a little bit about how people can get involved in a positive way with neglect rescuing horses?
Sure. Well, first of all, Christy, I agree with you. Legal action probably is the last resort. The way that you can get involved in a positive way generally don't involve the law. One of the first things I think you can do is go talk to the person that's having problems with the horse. Maybe they just need to be educated. You never know about that. They may not be receptive to that, but that's certainly an easy thing that anybody can do. Maybe they just don't know how to feed a horse, don't know how to take care of it, don't know what medical care it needs. You can educate a person and actually do a lot of good that way. But if you do wind up in a position where legal action is necessary, it isn't something that you can do yourself. You need to report it to the proper authorities. You can be a witness. You can collect documentary evidence, photographs and things, but the authorities are the ones who need to be taking the lead there.
All right. And, Mel, we talked a little bit the other day about the problem of capital in taking care of these horses. And that's something I think you've got some experience with as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Having enough
again,
money.
This isn't technically a legal issue, but one of the reasons that horse rescues fail is the same reason that most small businesses fail. They're undercapitalized at the start. I do some work with the Kentucky Horse Council here about rescues, and it's really depressing to see somebody who is working three jobs so they can feed the horses that they've rescued. And with a depression, you have to wonder what's going to happen when one of those jobs folds and you wind up having horses that have been rescued that have to be rescued from the rescue. And you know, you made a mention about giving a horse a home for Christmas. That's great, but what happens after Christmas? It's the same thing with giving people puppies and kittens for Christmas. You still have to take care of it, and I think that's the real issue. It's an ongoing commitment, and it takes a lot of money.
For sure, and I've got a friend who volunteers a lot with local dog rescues, and says it's just truly sad to see how many puppies are dumped at shelters after Christmas, and people that have given someone a puppy and they really just don't want it. So I think that's a very good point. And we talked a little bit too about say you've decided you really do want to help out a horse. What kind of paperwork is involved? What do you need to make sure is handled on both sides of that?
Well, if you're the person who's trying to set up a rescue, there are contracts and paperwork that you really need to have in place. The one issue is if somebody is donating a horse to you because they can't take care of it, you need to make sure that there's some sort of transfer of ownership. If not, the person might come back to you in the spring, say, thanks for feeding my horse over the winter, I'd like to have him back. And if you can't prove that the person actually intended to transfer ownership, then you're going to have to give him up or you've stolen that guy's horse. So that's one of the issues for a horse coming in. For a horse going out, there needs to be some sort of an adoption agreement. You need to have, you know, the right to examine the facility, the right to examine the horse. And one of the most important things, I think, is to have a provision that says that if the person who's adopted the horse can't take care of it in the future, that you as the rescuer gets first refusal to take the horse back. You want to have some fallback position in case it doesn't work out.
Sure. And I'd like to direct our next question to Glenn and Jamie a little bit. Let's take it a little bit more to the, you're walking, you're going down the street, you're driving down the road, you see a horse, and, oh, my God, this horse is super skinny, he's barely able to walk or whatnot. He's an apparently neglected horse. What do you think you can legally do to help that situation?
Well, I know that you just have to call the sheriff's department first, don't you?
In Arizona, probably, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I don't know what you can do anywhere else, but, yeah, we're supposed to call the sheriff's department and report it, and then they go out and they, you know, and unfortunately it takes too long to get everything all together for them to finally go out and take a look at horses that are in bad situations. So, you know, what I want to do is I want to back my trailer up, put them in it, and drive off. But I don't think you can do that either.
Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, probably not. Well, so what do you do?
Well, you know, it's much easier to say what you can't do than what you can do. And you can't trespass on somebody's property. You can't load up the horse and take it. You certainly can stand on the fence and take photographs, use those as documentary evidence. Again, but calling the authorities is what you can do, and that's very difficult because you're right. It does take a long time to get the wheels of the justice system in motion. And then you face, in, particularly in a small town, the owner of the neglected or abused horse might be friends with the sheriff, and nothing ever gets done. And, you know, it's an incredibly frustrating process.
This is Erin. I'm blessed with a very good animal rescue group in my, or animal control legal system in my county that I primarily have my clinic in. It takes one phone call and they're out the next day. So not necessarily what I say across the board is it completely hard to do, but check with your sheriff's office, see if they have a separate division. We do. That's an animal rescue or animal control, and they actually carry a badge, carry a gun as well, that they can go in and demand that people make changes in 30 days, have a veterinarian out, they need to see the documentation, and then 30 days they come back and things aren't changed, then they can confiscate the animals. So I'm very blessed with that.
You're very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've actually kind of grown out to the other outside counties that I travel into for my work, and, you know, with my experience, I've just told the other sheriff offices that this is what we have going on, and it seems to work very well, and they keep it anonymous as well. So that's a big thing, because people are scared about making enemies of their neighbors.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you recommend? So we're driving down the road. We look off to the side. We see a bunch of emaciated horses. What do you recommend you immediately do?
Well, again, from my perspective, you need to notify the authorities. And just to elaborate on what Erin said a little bit, I think it's really important to contact the authorities and identify yourself and let them know that you're interested before you need them. So you establish a relationship with these people so they actually know who you are when you call. That they will put a lot more stock in what you're saying if they know who you are and know you're serious. But, again, you see an emaciated horse, you can't toss feed over the fence.
Really?
You can't do that.
Huh.
The horse may have a medical condition that you
mm-hmm.
might worsen by feeding it something it isn't used to or something it shouldn't be getting. There may be allergies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up with saddlebreds, and we had a very good fine harness horse that simply we couldn't keep weight on him. By the end of a show season, he was probably a 3 on the condition score. And people seeing him in a field would think he was very neglected. In fact, he wasn't. He had great care. He got all the food he could want. He just wouldn't carry weight. So you can't know for sure just by looking.
Well, I was really worried about that. Yeah, I was worried about that when we rescued our old man in the backyard. You know, he's got one eye. He was probably, 500 pounds underweight. He was like skin and bones with a big pot belly full of sand. And I was worried that people were going to call on me because he's in my backyard. But he's with a big fat thoroughbred and a big fat warm blood. So I was kind of hoping, just look at the other horses. I promise, I feed them.
Fatness by association.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Exactly.
And that is another reason for contacting the legal authorities, because they can say, yes, we've already been contacted, or yes, we're already working with them. So, you know, if they have a legitimate subsection like I have with the animal control, it works out very well. With animal control, those dogs and cats, and it does do the horses. You know, their primary concern, of course, is dogs and cats because that's their building's made for it. They have a very, very small paddock in the back, and we had 22 horses in there at one time in less than an acre lot because they had to be chained in, part of a criminal act. And so, you know, we may do in that respect, but their building is made for dogs and cats, and that's the fact that they do the extra and go and get the horses is tremendous, and they work well with us.
I know in Pennsylvania, the Humane Society was the one that they'd work with the police department, but it was Humane Society was the one ultimately that would go repo the horses when the court order came, because we actually helped them do a couple. I'll tell that story later in the show. I have a funny story from helping them do that up there. But, you know, it's, you know, I think it's different in every state, too, isn't it?
It is. It's going to depend on state law, and state law is generally similar, but there's going to be little nuances everywhere. And there are also going to be different resources. I know in Kentucky, the Kentucky Horse Council has a program every year where they provide legal training for animal control officers and explain to them what they can do, what they can't do, how they need to proceed, you know, the rules of evidence, everything involved in prosecuting a criminal case. And that's been very well received, and it's been very helpful for the animal control officers, you know, a lot of whom don't really know the legalities of the issue.
Right. So obviously, the other side to this, and we talked about this a little bit last week with the people from Lope, which is out of Texas and a well-run rescue for thoroughbreds, is finding let's take it the next step. Okay, we're actually Christy. I want to adopt a horse. How do I know that the organization that I'm dealing with is legitimate?
I think there are a number of questions that you can ask, and we've got some information on this on our adoptable horse service on thehorse.com. you can ask to see some of their records. You can go out, and mainly the thing is to just go out and see the place and see how well they're taking care of the horses. See what condition the horses that they have are in. Talk to them about how those horses have progressed. If you can, ask them for people who have also adopted horses from them. Try to speak with some of those people. I mean, there are a number of things you can do. We have an article on thehorse.com if you want to take a search for it. It's article number 12651, if anybody wants to write down that number. It's also called Horse Rescue Organizations Questions to Ask. One is, can I see your financial information? I mean, if they're a charitable group, a 501c3, you know, they have to be willing to share that information with you. And if they won't reveal that, then maybe it's because they're not really a charity. And maybe they aren't necessarily doing the right things with their money and have the horse's best interest in the forefront. You know, where do they get their money? Can their vet examine the horse before they take the horse? Do they know of any problems with the horse? Where did the horse come from? And some of that one they may not know as much, you know, but what do they want to know about you? If all they're trying to do is kick a horse off on the first person who comes to the door, they may not be such a responsible place either. And you know, if you're trying to donate a horse to that facility, obviously you're going to want to visit it. Can you give the references, as I mentioned already, and do people sign a contract? Again, you want to make sure that they're trying to make sure that the horses are cared for and that all the, you know, the T's are crossed and the I's dotted.
And I think the reason that we're bringing that up, some people might wonder why I'm questioning that, is because there's a lot of shady horse dealers that put themselves off as rescues. And they're not feeding the horses either, you know, so... you know, that's why I brought that up. And I know that, is it the TCA, the Thoroughbred Charities of America? I think that they have a list there, too, of the ones that that they've gone through and sort of approved. And so that's the Thoroughbred Charities of America, too. How often do you, and this is open for anybody, how often, maybe Dr. Jones even, how often do you see horses that are taken in by somebody as a rescue case that then need rescued themselves? You see that very often?
Yes, I do. More often lately than before because of the unwanted horse problem that we have going on in the United States and the bad economy. So, yes. In fact, we just did an appointment last Tuesday of a rescue horse that was rescued from a rescue place. So,
yeah.
And that one was a body condition score of a 4. He didn't allow us to do a fecal exam. We highly recommended a fecal exam. The teeth needed to be done. He said, I'll have to postpone that. We want to update the vaccinations. And the Coggins did come with the horse. And then a good physical, and the physical came out normal. But, you know, we really wanted to address digestive issues because it had a low body weight. And, you know, he was suggesting that we would come back at a different date to do that. It's Christmas time and such, and he wanted to at least get the vaccinations done.
Well,
yeah.
It's amazing. Sometimes you go to a place just working as a large animal vet tech, and Dr. Jones, you must have experienced this too. You get to a place that is just horrible, and they've called you to come out and take care of something, and you get out there, and the place is horrible. They're like, yeah, we just rescued this horse. I'm like, rescued it from what? If this is where it lives now, where did it come from, poor thing?
Yeah. And there's
sure.
Quick story I have on that is that I went to a place and, again, really happy with the rescue or the animal control group I have. I went out. The lady said she had rescued the horse 6 months ago, and it was a body condition score of a 3. And I'm thinking in 6 months' time, you haven't put weight on this horse. So I suggested doing the horse's teeth. She declined. So I anonymously turned her in. And
good for you.
I did. And it was great because then they requested she have a veterinarian come out and address the horse's teeth and stuff. So I went out to get a chance to do the horse's teeth. And she said, you know, I know that neighbor. She's the one that turned me in. But I'm thinking 6 months' time, this horse has not gained sufficient amount of weight, and it needed its teeth done in order to gain the weight. It was really in bad condition in its mouth when I did an oral exam. So, you know, you run into
this
situation.
We had this conversation the other day, too. One of the things that surprises me about Kentucky, speaking of horses' condition and living conditions, is that in Pennsylvania, if a horse was turned out, it had to have a shelter, a three-sided at least shelter, a lean-to. It was required by law. If you didn't, they'd take your horse from you. And we actually were on a repossession that they took the animals because they didn't have shelters. The animals were fed, didn't matter. They didn't have shelters. And in Kentucky, you see all these horses turned out without shelters all times of the year. And it, I guess growing up in Pennsylvania, it just sort of drives me nuts. And I, that's a state-by-state thing, too.
Exactly. That's not a requirement here.
Yeah.
Yeah, try being in Arizona when it's 117 and the people, that's where we got our pony from, was it was standing in a 10-by-10 stall, no turnout, no shade, in 117-degree weather when there's not a cloud in the sky. You just, I mean, how can you not require shade?
Right.
I would require shade.
Yeah, me too. I did.
Sorry, Christy, we sort of took over your conversation here. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. No, we're good. But I would like to get back just real briefly to something Aaron was talking about with the dental care and whatnot. What, as far as trying to help these horses is once you get them in to a rescue, what are some of the things that you really need to focus on doing right away and some of the things that maybe you shouldn't do right away?
Well, of course, feeding. Everybody wants to feed them. And that's one thing I find as a big problem is to put a big roll bale out there in the pasture. Or they throw them out into green grass that they've never been on, and you've got problems of colic or founder because they're getting into something rich that they that their body's not used to, and the bacterial flora have to change. So you have to slowly introduce them to your diet that you have on your farm, or if it's your first horse, to a new diet. So it's a slow progression in that. The second thing is they all want to deworm them because they say they're wormy. They're rough, their hair coat looks rough, they're itching their tail, things like that. And a lot of times their hair coat's rough because they've had poor nutrition, not necessarily the worms, but I do, I'm sure if they've been in a stockyard of horses that there is probably a parasite problem. With the new Vogue do fecal exams before deworming, I recommend they do that because they can hit them with a very hard dewormer like moxidectin, do a very fast kill on the worms and cause other GI upset problems with the horse. And so they need to either pick a slower kill dewormer like a fenbendazole and then come back with a harsher one, but better yet, do a fecal exam first. And it doesn't, it won't take much to grab that first little round ball, take it up to a vet clinic. You don't even have to have the horse there, you know, looked at or anything like that. You could take it up to the vet clinic and say, I'd like to do a fecal exam on this, on my, you know, new rescue horse, or have them come out and do physical exam and take a fecal immediately and get you a best result of what to deworm with. The other things is you can vaccinate them, but don't do it in the first day or two when they arrive. They're coming to a new environment. If they're coming to other horses, they got to learn a pecking order. And that pecking order will stress them out, and you're also going to boost their immune system. You want them to be relaxed. You want them to be able to accept the immune stimulant of that vaccine. So do the vaccinations, but it shouldn't be their first couple days there at the farm. And then, of course, their teeth.
Right.
Everybody always forgets the teeth, and the teeth need to be done. I did, like I said, I did the 21-head rescue off this guy's property where there are bones found of horses that probably died and, you know, deteriorated there on his property. And he kept saying, oh, that one's old. Oh, that one's old. I'd look in the mouth, and it was a 6-year-old with the most horrid set of teeth. Well, yeah, it looks old because it's a body condition score of a 1 or 2, but it's not old. It just had very bad teeth.
That's huge. And then, of course, we mentioned the other day foot care.
Oh, my gosh,
a lot
yeah.
of these horses may appear to be really, really lame, but it may just be that their feet are just mechanically that messed up.
Absolutely.
You see the long, really split feet or the slipper feet, and maybe that once you turn those feet back, the horses really aren't lame anymore. They don't have necessarily a big underlying problem.
And, again, nutrition, it reflects in our hair and stress. We all lose our hair when we're stressed out. We get acne when we're stressed out. It reflects in our skin and our hair, and it's going to reflect in their feet, too. So their feet are going to be in really poor condition if they've been in a bad situation nutrition-wise.
So sure. That's my problem.
Yep.
You have bad feet?
Yeah. Bad, and my hair's falling out. It's working with Jamie every day. That's what it is. But I didn't have this before I started working with Jamie every day.
Well,
who do I call?
Yeah, right. Dream on. You got it good. No, I it's funny you mentioned that about the hair thing, because after receiving an emaciated horse in Georgia when I lived there, I spent some time and, you know, he had rain rot all over. So I started giving him this, you know, my vet gives me this special shampoo for the horse. And the horses actually lose their hair. You know, when they start to get healthy, they'll shed all that nasty hair. Well, I didn't know that. And then I used this special shampoo on him. I call my vet. I'm like, he's bald, Jerry. The horse is bald. He lost all his hair. What kind of shampoo did you give me? He's bald. He's like, it's totally okay. They're supposed to do that. I was like, no way. Because I was like wiping my hand on him, and the hair would just wipe right off. Ugh.
It should. Yeah, it should.
Well, I didn't know that. Now we all know. Your horse does not go bald.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, one thing that we also wanted to talk a little bit about is as these horses start recovering from the state that they've been in, a lot of times, I think, Aaron, you and I talked about people may pick up a horse like this and they say, oh, he's a great, really quiet horse. He'd probably be great for my kids. But then that horse, you re-feed that horse a little bit, and suddenly maybe it's not so good with kids. You see that very often?
Yes, and Mel might have something to say to this, too, is that they have this nice, quiet horse when they get them, and all of a sudden you feed them and they get some energy. Woohoo! And they've got a little bit of a spunk horse there, a little Mustang going on, and they can't catch the horse anymore, or they can't ride them or anything like that. They go too fast now, things like that. So, yeah, they're very, you know, lethargic when you get them because they're very sick from either the worms or some sort of condition they have, and you just make the corrections and next thing you know, you've got your hands full.
Our cat was like that. He was all sick when we got him. He's all sweet and nice, and now his name is the Beast for a reason.
Taken off on you.
And you know,
you see
that with you see that with Christmas ponies too, don't you? Ponies especially.
Yeah.
They're all...
Yes, definitely ponies.
Well, thank you, guys. We appreciate it. We're running out of time here today. You know, this is an interesting topic to talk about a couple days before Christmas, but this is also, you're right, the time of year when people think about adopting and doing something nice. We just want to make sure that something nice that they're doing doesn't turn into disaster.
That's exactly right. And if, you know, with all this discussion that we've had, you're ready to take in a horse. I'd like to mention again our adoptable horse service on thehorse.com. We have currently 312 horses that are looking for homes, free to good homes. And if you are ready to prepare to help out, I'm sure that some of them would love to see you.
Well, Christy, I want you to, you know, give a special hug to the boss who okayed that part of your website, because it's really, really great, you know, and I feel like you're given 312, I think you said, a chance, and, you know, that's for you guys to advertise that, you're kind of putting yourself out there on the line, and I really, really want you to thank all the higher-ups and you for participating in that and trying to find these horses a home. We really do appreciate it, and I want to wish you guys all, you know, Milt and Dr. Jones, a very Merry Christmas, and hope you guys have a great, great holiday season. And hopefully we'll talk to you guys again next week.
We will. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Thank you. Same to you.
Take care.
And Dr. Jones, I'm wishing you a call-free day.
Yes. Thank you. Yay. That would be the best Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
guys.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Always educating and informative, you know, for thehorse.com to come on. And it's such an interesting topic, too, every single time. We could just go on and on and on. And every horse person has their own stories. And, of course, anybody's welcome to call at 347-637-3238 and kind of talk about their stories. Or just if you want to wish us Merry Christmas. I mean, Glenn, what do you think? What are you doing
You know, did I ever tell you, Jennifer was chuckling when I said I'd tell this story later. I'll do it right after. Did I ever tell the story of the repo horse that we did in Pennsylvania on the show?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. I'll tell that story right after this word. Speaking of horse health, you're never quite sure if you're feeding your horse correctly. And one of the ways you can make sure that you are feeding your horse correctly, it's very simple. It's very easy. You go to feedxl.com. Feedxl.com is the place you want to go. It takes you a couple of minutes. You just put in information about your horse, his weight, his breed, and all that stuff. And then you take another couple minutes and you put in everything that you're feeding your horse. And they have like over 2,500 different feeds in there, all broken out into their different minerals and ingredients and all that stuff. And you put in your hay you're feeding them and how much grass they get, all of that. And FeedXL does some calculations and prints out some graphs and some charts and some reports that tells you everything about your horse. It tells you whether you're given too much hay or too much of this supplement or too little of that supplement. And it really breaks it down for you so that you know that you're feeding your horse correctly. And it's as simple as spending 5 to 10 minutes at feedxl.com to do that. So you know at the end of the day, at this time of year, that you're doing the right thing by your horse. So do that right thing and stop over to feedxl.com. So we had this farm that in Pennsylvania, Jamie, that set back a mile-long lane. So you could not see it from the road. So
Is this the one that got snowed in?
Yes.
Okay.
So the Humane Society got wind of that and thought, oh, what a perfect place to put the repo horses, because the owners then couldn't drive around, see them in a pasture, and try and steal them back. So they called us up and said, will you help with this repo up in a northern county that's over the mountain and through the woods? And so we did. We said, okay, we'll help you out. They had a couple of cows. I remember one or two cows, Jennifer, and then two horses. And they were taking all the dogs and cats. Everything was coming out of this place. So we had to go meet them at the police station first. And we walk in, and there's this state cop, Pennsylvania state cop, who is spit shined to the max. His shoes were so shiny, I could you know, comb my hair in them. And I said to him, I said, you look kind of out of place. This was a rural county. And he said, it's my first day on the job. He was a Philadelphia assigned policeman before. So it was his first day on the job in this rural, the butt of all jokes county in Pennsylvania. So, and I said, oh, and you know, I thought, okay. And his first task and his first duty here in this county was to go on this animal repossession with the Humane Society. So there's several trucks, us, you know, Humane Society vehicles, many people, and we pull in all in force, and he goes up and serves the warrant. And the owner, this lady, is standing in the middle of the paddock with mud a foot deep. It was a foot deep, and she's got a grip on the two horses. So they knew we were coming. She's got a grip, and I'm telling you, the mud was deep. Lose your shoes deep. And she's got a grip on these horses, and the state cop looks at me and says, go take the horses. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So I go in, and I'm trudging through the mud in this paddock, and I'm going over to the lady who is screaming at me at this point, and I'm going, oh, this is going to be bad. And sure enough, I get within foot range, and she kicks me hard right in the groin. Yeah.
What?
She about doubled me over. She kicked me right in the groin because that's the only thing she had free. She was clamped onto the horses on their halters with her hands. And I'm just about going over, and the cop was, like, mad because now he had to get in to the mud. He was mad. His spit-shined shoes and his uniform were covered in mud. He went in there, and he grabbed her, and he drug her out of there, threw her on the ground. He was mad. And so I got the horses, and I loaded them up. But he said,
meanwhile,
you're
face deep in the mud because you bowled over when she kicked you in the jewels.
Well, and he looked at me and he said, don't you go back home yet. We had to stop at the police station. I'm surprised Jennifer's not commenting on any of this. We had to stop at the police station on the way back so he could take pictures of the footmark right on my groin. There was this mud print. It was a perfect mud print right there. So he was taking pictures of that and everything. And then we were heading down the mountain to head home, and we were being followed by the police and the Humane Society trucks, and they pulled us over, going down this mountain, I mean a serious mountain, and they pulled us over, and they said, somebody from the family is following us. We have to get rid of them first. So we had this whole drama over getting these two horses. It was quite an experience. We never did it again after that. But
no, we didn't. That was sufficient for us. The really funny part is they weren't taking pictures of Glenn's mud print because they needed evidence. They were going to take a picture of it and hanging it in the break room at the police station.
I think that's
Oh, my gosh.
But so pissed. He was mad. I guarantee you he requested a transfer back to Philadelphia. He probably thought he was getting a cushy assignment. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the lack of shelter wasn't the only issue in that particular situation. And because, you know, don't make the state police out as, you know, meanies because, oh, just because they didn't have a shelter. The horses kept getting loose and being on the roads. So people driving home from work at night, a lot of folks up in that particular part of the countryside worked night shift at one of the factories. They would have to navigate these back roads in the middle of the night and try to dodge the horses. And so the problem was
that'll
they were,
kill somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well,
they just were not being responsible.
And that's the part I left out of the story. When we met him at the police station on the way up, he said the reason there's so many of us here and the reason the police are here is we're afraid that he might have a gun and take shots at us. Okay.
Oh,
we should have just,
sure.
Yeah. We should have just turned around at that point and went home.
Yeah. The next time
then
we
had to go back a second time and get the cows. We had to make the trip back up the second time an hour up the road to get the cows and bring them back. So that was that was fun, too. What a day.
So much for volunteering. So much for trying to do a good thing.
Yeah. I'll just stay away from the repossession aspect. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else, a little braver.
So there
can't
you
be
go.
A happy thing. So.
There you go. And on
that happy note. Did you see that the nominations came out for the USEF's 2010 Equestrian and Horse of the Year candidates? And they're now taking votes. Did you see what was missing?
Lots of stuff. Okay, this is the United States Equestrian Federation's 2010 Horses of the Year and Equestrians of the Year. And there is not one event horse on there. There's only one show jumper. So, but how can the eventers be left out of it? No horse,
no
rider.
No dressage horses either.
No dressage, right.
Yeah, that's right. So it's kind of interesting, the group this year. I actually only know of these. You knew one of them. I know, of course, we know Tom McCutcheon, who's been on the show here. He was the 2-time gold medalist for reigning at the WEG with his horse Gunner Special Night. Tom was nominated for Equestrian of the Year and also for the Horse of the Year, and I think he has a darn good chance of winning that. And 2 gold medals at the WEG probably does, you know, put you in that category. And then we know McLean Ward, obviously, the show jumper. But other than that, I really don't. You knew Hunt Tosh.
Hunt Tosh, actually, like, this is how the world works, I guess. Hunt Tosh and I competed against each other when I was a kid growing up in the Hunter Jumper shows in Alpharetta, Georgia. And they just had, like, he lives in a town called Milton, and they just had Hunt Tosh Day. They just celebrated Hunt Tosh. And so he's gone on to be nominated for Equestrian of the Year. And I'm like, I used to know that guy.
Yeah, and you're sitting here working with me. How does that work out?
I know. I need to get the sheriff's department involved. Yeah, but no, I do. That's the only reason I know who he is. I mean, I'm not a big, you know, I don't really follow the Hunter world very much. But they've got, you know, a driving Andalusian driver nominated. They've got a saddlebred. They've got a roadster stallion, an Arabian, a Frisian, a Morgan, and a saddlebred rider. So, you know, I'm not quite well-versed in the knowledge of all of these sports and all of the who's who in the, you know, American saddlebred world, but I just find it hard to believe that there's no eventers or dressage riders. We, you know what, we'll have to talk to Chris about that tomorrow, but she's madder than a cat.
Well, you know, especially there's one glaring missing on this list is Stephen Peters and Ravel. I mean, that's the one I think that's, you know, glaringly missing.
Well, maybe he's,
you know, with the medals.
Maybe he won some
God.
Other year, and that disqualified.
He won last year, actually.
Well, there you go.
Did he win last year? I don't know if he can win 2 years in a row. I'm not sure.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why they left him off, just because they wanted to give somebody else a chance. But I do find that, you know, I mean, I think Teddy O'Connor won it the year before, so maybe they've got an eventer and a jumper too close together or something. But you would certainly think that he would have
mixed it up a bit.
Could there be a conspiracy?
Yeah, Jennifer. Walker, you're onto something.
I'm onto something. Call History Channel.
How come
well, you know what? Maybe our show's all about education. Maybe we should try and get some of these nominees on and chat with them and find out a little bit more about why they're nominated. So that you know, we'll take a look. There's another assignment for Jennifer to keep her busy.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want her to get bored. You know, she's spending too much time Christmas shopping right now. So we actually did go out and got a lot of our shopping done yesterday, which was nice. It was nice to get that done. And Phyllis from Texas, we have not forgotten you. We're coming back tomorrow morning, because we're running out of time right now, but we're coming back tomorrow morning. We're getting a hold of you before this is done. Jamie has to call you on Christmas Day.
I'll call her on Saturday morning, my whole family around. Hey, Phyllis, just leaving you another message. We'll call her again tomorrow morning, so you don't want to miss that. If you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to the start of yesterday's show and today's show. We're stalking Phyllis, so we will get you tomorrow.
We'll get the sheriff called on us soon. Be sure to listen to all the shows at the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Remember that tomorrow is our last live show for the week before the holiday. And then we have a special recorded episode for you on Friday, our hour of music and enjoyment and fun and chatter with Templeton Thompson. That'll be what comes up on Friday. But tomorrow we have a fun day planned. What do we got coming up tomorrow, Jamie?
Well, I believe we have the Chronicle Report. We're also going to talk to Dr. Jen, the love doctor. And there's a couple topics that we've had coming up through the weeks since we last talked to her that have come up. And I know one of them was, is it okay if you don't love your horse? Because I know so many people that ride, and you know, you see so many people dumping their money into horses that really they don't like and don't like them. So we're gonna work on the horse human relationship with Dr. Jen, the love doctor, tomorrow. So we will get the entire fill of that. So we want to wish everybody Merry Christmas, happy shopping. Please, God, let Chad have made that plane this morning. I'll post it on Facebook if he made the plane. So hopefully he's landing in Madrid, Spain pretty soon. So happy, you know, travels, safe travels, Merry Christmas, and goodbye, everybody. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll try and keep it a little lighter tomorrow. And I know we're planning on having some eggnog and some fun, even at this hour of the morning.